Well, good morning, and a blessed Advent to everyone. It is both an honor and a challenge to be standing in this pulpit when I still feel so engaged and so challenged by last week's sermon. And by sermon, I mean both the message Professor Walton brought from this pulpit and the sermon he and his students preached in silence on the porch of this church. So while it's a little daunting to be the preacher who follows that, I'm also really grateful that I get to stand up here today and, as a grateful parishioner, say thank you to Professor Walton and to all the students who preached such a transformative word last week. Would you pray with me? Oh, send out your light and your truth. Let them lead us. Let them lead us to your holy hill and to your dwelling. Then we will go to your altar, O God, our exceeding joy. And we will praise you with the harp, O God, our God. Amen. On a Christmas Eve 9 centuries ago, a woman named Elizabeth was keeping vigil in church with her community. And as she sat there praying and waiting, a vision began to come into focus. Soon she saw a woman sitting in the center of a bright and shining sun. The woman's hair was long and loose and fell over her shoulders, and the light from the sun around her filled first the room in which Elizabeth was praying, and then gradually spread out to illuminate the whole world. As Elizabeth gazed at her, a dark cloud rushed in to obscure the rays of the sun, and the woman began weeping. Then, after a time, the cloud receded, and the light from the sun once again filled the room and moved out into the world. Elizabeth sat up all night long, watching the cloud moving in and out, the woman shining and weeping, the earth lightening and darkening. The next day, Christmas Day, an angel appeared to Elizabeth, and she asked him to explain who the woman in her vision was. And here's what the angel told her. "That woman," the angel said, "is the sacred humanity of Jesus. And the sun around her is the divinity which holds Christ's humanity and illuminates it." Now, we haven't quite arrived at Christmas Eve, although we'll sing carols together this evening. But the third Sunday of Advent is an equally good time for us to seek a renewed vision of the humanity of Jesus. Advent's prophetic voices lift up God's concern for our most deeply human experiences and ask us to make that concern our own. Isaiah calls for good news for the oppressed, healing for the brokenhearted, liberty for captives, comfort for those who mourn. John's gospel describes the testimony of John the Baptist, who honored the humanity of those who sought him out, including Jesus, by lowering them into the Jordan River and pulling them out again, reborn. Our psalm this morning sings of God knitting us together in our mother's womb. We are, the psalmist says, fearfully and wonderfully made. Fearfully, because in our humanity, we are so vulnerable. Wonderfully, for the same reason. Surely God created us as vulnerable, embodied human beings, so that we would need each other. In our very creation, God placed us in each other's care. I think we can all agree that it's been a hard year for that vision of what it means to be human. A vision in which our shared humanity binds us to one another and calls us to take responsibility for each other. In the midst of all that makes us different from one another, our race, our ethnicity, our gender, our sexuality, our vocation, our politics, there is one thing we truly hold in common: our embodied humanity and the sacred vulnerability that comes with it. Our civic life, though, has not been marked by the conviction that our shared humanity is sacred. We have stopped children at the border of our country seeking relief from extreme violence and poverty and sent them back. An unarmed teenager named Michael Brown was shot 12 times by a police officer and left to lie in the street for hours. An unarmed Eric Garner died of an illegal chokehold, surrounded by police officers and emergency medical workers. Tamir Rice, a 12-year-old boy holding a toy gun, was shot dead by a police officer before he was asked a single question. And the recently released torture report tells the shameful story of our country's deliberate exploitation of the vulnerability of human bodies in order to inflict the greatest possible pain and suffering. It's like we've shut our eyes to each other's humanity. On the border, desperate children far from home are viewed by some not as children, but as lawbreakers, criminals. In his testimony to the grand jury in Ferguson, the officer who killed Michael Brown compared him to a demon and to a comic book character who had the ability to run through a hail of bullets unscathed. That's how he saw Michael Brown, like an action figure, not as vulnerable, not as human, not as fearfully and wonderfully made. During Advent, the prophets exhort us to wake up. They ask us to open our eyes and see the world as it is. But they also ask us, as Professor Walton told us last week, to do more than that. The prophets call us to imagine and to work for the world as it might become. A world in which the oppressed are given good news, broken hearts are mended, those who mourn are comforted, and those who are in prison set free. When we left the building last Sunday after the service ended and found our students lying on the steps of the church, the voices of the prophets echoed in the disciplined silence they kept. Their masks said, "I can't breathe." Their bodies said, "Open your eyes and see. See Michael Brown. See Eric Garner. See Tamir Rice. See how their lives mattered." Our students asked us to see the world as it is. And they called us to commit ourselves to the world as it might become. The vision God gave to Elizabeth of Chinon back in the 12th century offered a similar testimony. For Elizabeth's vision of the sacred humanity of Jesus was not just a vision of light and beauty, although it is that, but a vision also of profound grief. Elizabeth's vision captures the shining mystery of the incarnation, the mystery of our common humanity held in the light of divinity that we ponder and await this season. But that mystery and the stories we tell about it at Christmas contain sorrows that continue to echo into our own day, The weary family denied shelter when they most needed it. The mothers left inconsolable when Herod murders their children. It's no wonder that when the cloud moves in to obscure the light of divinity, the woman who is Christ's humanity begins to weep. Elizabeth describes her weeping as copious, profuse, reflecting a grief that is wholly inhabited, wholly felt. When the light of divinity gets clouded over in Elizabeth's vision, the tears of Christ's humanity shine instead. Now, Elizabeth's vision was apparently troubling to some of her contemporaries. Her critics advised her to speak again with her heavenly interpreters to find out why the humanity of Jesus had not appeared to her in a more masculine form. When John the Evangelist appeared to her a few days after Christmas, Elizabeth dutifully asked why Christ's humanity had appeared to her as a woman. John gave her an answer with which Elizabeth's critics couldn't argue. "Christ's humanity appeared to you as a woman," he said, "so that she could also represent Christ's mother." Elizabeth took John's "also" very seriously. And rather than replacing the original interpretation she had received with the new one, she kept both interpretations in her book of visions, knitting the humanity of Jesus more and more deeply into the fabric and variety of human life. By adding an interpretation without subtracting the other one, Elizabeth invites us to recognize the multiple forms Christ's humanity takes, the many faces out of which it shines. The vision our students offered to us last week and that demonstrators have continued to offer our country every day has also, like Elizabeth's vision, been troubling to some. Why make Michael Brown, who had just robbed a store, or Eric Garner, who was selling loose cigarettes illegally on the street, why make them the face of this movement, some have asked? Why not find more law-abiding citizens to rally around? Elizabeth of Chanot's critics wanted to know why she would want to complicate her Christology with a female image of Christ's humanity. Critics of the demonstrations want to know why marchers won't uncomplicate their politics by choosing more acceptable martyrs. I wonder if perhaps Elizabeth's answer and the activists' answer to their critics would be the same. I wonder if they would say, in one voice, "I opened my eyes, and this is what I saw in front of me. And what I saw made a claim on me that I cannot deny. I opened my eyes and saw that the sacred humanity of Jesus is as manifest in female bodies as it is in male bodies. I opened my eyes and saw that this country can never move forward until Black lives matter as much as every other life. I opened my eyes and saw the sacred humanity of Jesus in a woman who shone like the sun, in a young man shot and left in the street, in Eric Garner's outstretched hand, in the face of a mother weeping. I opened my eyes and saw that this vision was not for myself alone, but must be taught and shared, written down in a book, chanted and shouted, passed from hand to hand. I opened my eyes, and I cannot close them again. I think they would also say together that we are missing the point if we are waiting for an image of Christ or a representative of the movement for racial justice with which we are comfortable. If the incarnation means anything, It means that all human bodies and all human lives matter to God, and they ought to matter to us. No one deserves to have their humanity denied, ignored, or reduced to a cartoon image. Not refugees, not sellers of loose cigarettes, not even those we consider our mortal enemies. To dehumanize anyone is to dehumanize ourselves. We are all in this together. That's how God made us, vulnerable and in need of each other's help. The sacred humanity of Jesus gathers and blesses every human life and reveals the most mysterious possibilities that our humanity holds. And every age is blessed with visionaries who help us see it anew. Christ's humanity is all around us and within us, waiting to be recognized. John the Baptist said to those who came to question him, "Among you stands one whom you do not know, the one who is coming after me." This is as true now as it was when John was baptizing people in the Jordan. Christ stands among us, hidden in plain sight. Where do we see the sacred humanity of Jesus this Advent? If we open our eyes, what vision will rise up?